Pay attention. It's the Steve Gruber Show.
Ready or not, here I come. Gee, that used to be such fun.
33 after on a Monday. Glad to have you here for the conversation. Criminal justice reform throughout the nation could be a major policy initiative. And it was laid out and encouraged by President Donald Trump in the State of the Union address this past week. As Americans regain its strength, the president said, this opportunity must be extended to all citizens. That is why this year we will embark on reforming our prisons to help former inmates who have served their time get a second chance. I heard him say that a couple of times around the State of the Union. What do you think of that? Our next guest, Kevin Ring, is the president of Families Against Mandatory Minimums. Kevin, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So, all right. I've never liked mandatory sentencing in the first place, because I think if you have mandatory sentencing for a crime, you might as well have a laptop computer sitting up on the desk. No reason to have a judge if there's mandatory sentencing guidelines, right?
That's 100% right.
All right. So where do we go from here? You think that the president can make some inroads and have some impact on, you know, redoing and readdressing criminal justice in this country. Where do we begin?
Well, there's two ways to do it. One is what they call the front end, and that's sentencing. And the president hasn't shown as much interest in that, in part because Attorney General Sessions is a fan of mandatory sentences and long punishments. But the other part of the equation is the back end, and that's prison reform. And that's basically the idea that once you have people locked up, you might as well do everything you can while they're there to get them better prepared for when they get out. 94% of prisoners are going to go home someday. We want them to be better when they get out than when they went in. And that's what it seems like the president is focused on. I think it's a good idea.
All right, so it sounds nice on paper, and it's all very fuzzy. The recidivism rate in America is far too high. 3 out of 4 return to prison, I believe, is the number I last saw. Recidivism very high in America. But referring to your, I mean, that's a 30,000-foot view. Of course, we want all inmates to reform themselves, to never do drugs, to never hurt anybody, to go be productive and never go back to prison. But how do we get there?
Well, right now in federal prison, we do almost nothing. Besides some drug treatment programs, there's nothing. There's no programming. There's no job training. One of the biggest indicators of whether somebody's going to reoffend is whether they can find a job in their first few months when they get out. But right now, when prisoners go in, if they had any job skills, they atrophy. If they had none, they don't learn any. And so they come out really ill-prepared to find work. So the key is both, you know, education, allowing some educational opportunities, get their GED, people who can pursue their college degrees while they're in prison, let them do that. And then also job training, and the president talked about that a couple times. There's jobs that, you know, are people working with their hands, the kinds of things that, you know, elite people don't want to do, but prisoners would be happy to do when they could get out. Welding jobs, HVAC jobs, construction jobs, they'd be happy to do those. And so giving them those skills while they're in prison, while you have them, preparing them for those types of careers would be helpful.
Okay, so I get all of that, but you're going to have a hard sell with the average American saying we want to spend more on prison. Because what you just talked about, it comes with a big price tag, and it's going to be a hard sell.
Yeah, there's a way you can make it really cost effective, and that is if people really dedicate themselves to learning new skills or to educating themselves. Right now with the drug treatment program, when you complete the drug treatment program, if you do it, because it is proven to reduce the risk of reoffending, people get earned time off their sentence for doing that. And if you allow people to earn time off their sentence for participating in programming that actually works and helps reduce their risk of reoffending, you can reward them with time off. That's an incentive that works. And that incentive also reduces the cost of prison. So you can get programming that basically pays for itself. Some people aren't going to want to do it. Some people aren't going to succeed, and they're going to have to stay in prison. But those who are going to come home, we want to incentivize them to do this programming. You let them earn time off their sentence by doing it, and the programming will pay for itself.
Well, yeah, except it doesn't. You actually have to cut checks up front. It's nice to say the programming pays for itself, but really it doesn't. We have to pay for it. Somebody has to pay for it. It has to come out of a budget somewhere. That's a cold, hard fact.
Oh, yeah, I mean, if you're talking in year one, yes, that's true. But
well, in every year. I mean, it costs money every year. You can say that it costs, yeah, it pays for itself because you have less issues. That's a great idea, but up front it costs money, and government programs always get bigger in year two, year five, year 10. So I think that an actual numeric value has to be assigned to what sort of money are we talking here?
Well, when CBO has scored these types of programs in the past, you are reducing the number of prisoners because once they complete the programming, they're allowed to leave earlier, so you do reduce costs. The other way to do it is, the other incentive you can give them is to let them go to home confinement, so they're still under government supervision. Home confinement is a fraction of the cost of keeping somebody in a prison. So in either case, you can reduce the cost if you allow this to happen. But you're right, there will be an upfront cost for the programming. I don't know exactly how much that would cost.
Any guess?
In some ways, well, I mean, say the bill that's in Congress right now is authorizing $25 million per year. That's for the first couple of years. But I don't even know, there's other ways to do this. What states are doing is they're allowing employers and universities to get onto these prison compounds, so you're creating partnerships. The taxpayers don't have to be in the hook for all of this if the federal prisons would at least start letting these volunteers and others get onto the compounds. Right now, federal prisons are totally closed off, and that's a mistake as well.
You know, it's interesting that there are 2.3 million Americans in prison or jail today. Maybe a little bit more, but right around that 2.3 to 2.5 million Americans incarcerated today. Now, why is it that we have 5% of the world's population and 25% of the world's inmates? That's a question I'd like answered. Can you explain that to me?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. One, we have a high prison population because we have a high level of lethal violence. So we're not a more criminal society than other countries, but we do have more murders than other countries do.
And no,
so
we don't.
Have more
that's garbage. That's not true. You look at countries in Central America and Mexico and so forth, their murder rate per 100,000 is far higher than the United States, far higher.
If you look at the numbers, our lethal violence, the people that are in prison are there for murder and longer terms than in other countries. Our drug use rates and the rest are similar to those. We do lock people up for those crimes longer than other countries do.
But America, I don't mean to correct you, but it's important.
Yep.
Accuracy matters. America isn't even in the top 10 when it comes to violence rates in the world. Not even in the top 10. But despite what you read, you know, here on NBC News or CNN, the fact of the matter, facts are facts and facts matter.
Yeah, it depends who you're comparing us to.
I'm comparing us to the rest of the world. Mexico, Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, Colombia, several nations in Africa. I could go on. But anyhow, how would you get this, Kevin, how would you get this thing to work? I'll give you the last word, is what I'm saying. How would you get started on this whole reform process? Because you've got a long road to ahead of you if it's going to happen. And I'm just curious how you could get it started. I'll give you 20 seconds for the last word.
Sure. A lot of states have already started doing this. They've started to getting rid of mandatory sentences so judges have discretion, and they're using prison programming to help people get on their feet when they get back. When people get out of prison, they face so many collateral consequences that they can't find a job because they have a felony conviction, so states are waiving those requirements and trying to change those laws. We just have to realize that people are coming back, and we're either going to help them get on their feet or we're not.
Kevin Ring, president of the Families Against Mandatory Minimums, thank you for the conversation.
Thank you.
All right, quick break. We'll be right back here on the Steve Gruber Show.